This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 304, where today AC and CJ are going to recap the Microsoft SharePoint Conference 2019, recorded live May the 24th, 2019.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
Hey, CJ.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah. How are you this morning?
Kind of tired.
Pray tell, can you share with our listeners why you're so tired?
Vegas. And not because I got up to anything dastardly or naughty or anything bad or super drunken or anything like that. I was actually really well behaved this year. It just all destroys me. Like, it's the environment and just going for a whole week, you know? And so I'm pretty wrecked. I got back last night. Slept really well, but it takes me usually a day or two to get back into the swing of things, you know?
Yeah, so you flew in on Monday afternoon and flew and then went home on Thursday afternoon, evening. Is that right?
Yeah. So I was only there for like 4 days.
Okay. Yeah. So you did that. And then I flew in.
Saturday.
Yeah. So actually for our listeners, we should explain what's going on. This past week, we're recording on a Friday and Monday, or really Sunday through, I guess through today, it's still going on today, is the Microsoft SharePoint Conference 2019 in Las Vegas.
Yes.
So there were workshops on Sunday, Monday. There were breakout sessions, keynote on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then on Friday, which happens to be the same day we're recording this, but you and I aren't there anymore, is post-con workshop. So yeah, I flew in on Saturday, which was one hell of an experience getting there on Saturday night. And then I flew home on Wednesday night because I had my son graduated from middle school. And so there was a little ceremony on last night. And there was no way I was going to miss it. So yeah, I was on Saturday on my way out. I had a swim meet that our community was hosting on Saturday morning. So I got up at 4 a.m. East Coast time, Eastern. Vegas is 3 hours off. So that's 1 a.m. Vegas time, right?
Yeah.
So I did the whole thing, did the whole swim meet, sit in the sun and everything, got back to the house at around 12:30 or 1 o'clock East Coast time, got something to eat, got a shower, and then just kind of chilled for a bit and then realized, okay, I got to go pack my bag. So I packed my bag and jumped on a flight at 6 p.m. East Coast time. Now, talk about fun.
Yeah.
I got to Atlanta, and a flight from Atlanta to Vegas is only supposed to be about 3 hours and 45 minutes, maybe 4 hours and 15 minutes. Just depends on the jet stream.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge storms in the central U.S. And so we went from Atlanta due south down to the Gulf of Mexico and then hugged the U.S.-Mexico border, flying right over the wall, and then back up north to Las Vegas. So it was like a 5-hour flight. And it didn't get to my hotel room and get to bed until about 1 or 1:30, and then had a full day workshop the next day to deliver.
Wild.
I had a meal on Friday night, and then I had my next meal on Sunday night. And that, between all that time, it was snacking on like Cliff Bars, potato chips, whatever, yeah, on whatever I could to get, or two pieces of cold pizza from the lunch during the workshops. But just
rough.
Oh man. Yeah. I'm with you though about Vegas, man. You know, I don't know if it's I don't know what it is. I, like you, I was very tame. There was no crazy party scene or late nights or anything like that. It just Las Vegas, and I don't know if it's because, you know, part we're older, part there was a time when we were going there multiple times a year for multiple years, and I kind of got it all out of my system, and I'm just kind of like,
I can understand why people are excited about it. Like, it's a fun place. There's lots of cool stuff to do, but I think after you've been there a bunch of times, that sort of wears off, and that. So I can see why it's an attractive location for a conference, because it does pull people from all over the world, you know, because it is an attraction. I get that. But for me, it's a bunch of that is worn off now. And it's just the environment just really takes it out of me. So like it's extremely dry and So you get really dehydrated. You're inside an aircon the whole time, and there's smoke there and stuff. So yeah, it just sort of builds up on me. I say I end up with vagus nose, but not that sort of vagus nose. Right? You get that sort of dehydrated, kind of crusty sinus feeling. But yeah, on the whole, glad to be home. But I had a fun time there in general with the team. And it was mostly for the personal conversations and the seeing friends and side discussions more than anything else. I didn't go to a single... Well, no, that's not true. I did go to a session, but that's only because I was doing a demo in it. And I didn't go to any actual sessions, which I probably should have. But I spent most of my time in side meetings with customers, partners, and people from our company that I don't get to see very often because we're all over the world. So it was a great experience from that in that regard.
Yeah, you're Mr. Executive now. You don't have you're not in the trenches as much anymore. And so it's always like, you know, I need more meetings and running the business and business development and planning and stuff, huh?
Yeah, side meetings and yeah, the really fun stuff.
So you didn't have, unlike other conferences, you didn't have a single, I know you had a demo and the developer keynote, but aside from that, you didn't have any sessions to deliver this time, did you?
No sessions, and it felt great, I have to say. Yeah. One of those sort of people now that I sign up for those things, I'll commit to do them. And then I kind of regret it in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases I regret it because it's a lot of work. Those sessions, unless it's a session you've just banged out a bunch of times, it's a lot of preparation and work. I don't know if people realize how much effort goes into pulling off a 60 or 75 minute session, but it's a lot of work and you get kind of busy with regular day-to-day stuff. And then you think, oh boy, I've got to start putting some effort into this. And it drags on. So no, it was a really nice experience actually in that regard, not having to stress about delivering sessions. And but yeah, I did a demo in Vesa ran the developer keynote. I guess you can call it a keynote. It's sort of the mini note. It was the one after Jeff Tepper's keynote, specifically around developers. And that was like 6 minutes of work, so it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, showing stuff that's already built and all that. So
yeah, we were demoing all that stuff at our booth, so it was all good to go and wasn't too painful. But I got to tell you though, I was standing out backstage before I walked on, and I was like, I was really nervous. Like, man, I haven't done this in a while. Pacing backwards and forwards, and yeah, it was funny. It was a very very weird experience.
You couldn't tell. You couldn't tell. But it was, you looked like you were just a natural, like always, dude.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
I heard your workshop went really well, though. It was awesome.
It did. I had, I think they said I had something like 135 people in it. It felt about like that. It was different than a lot of the workshop I've done. I've done it before. So this is all about mastering the SharePoint framework, which is about, I take about 5 to 7 hours. Actually, I probably take about 7 to 8 hours of content out of my on-demand class that I sell. And I put it all on the slides and in the download. And then we just get through as much as we can. I know that I'm not going to get through all of it. But this one was interesting because they only had workshops scheduled from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. They usually start around 9 o'clock, but they almost always end at 5 or later. And so I kind of got caught off guard again by losing an hour. But it was good.
And you also break for lunch, I imagine.
Yeah, you break for lunch. Well, you break for the attendees to have lunch. You try to go have lunch, but after they've been asking questions for about 20 minutes going into your lunch break, you've got to race down, you know, go try and get something to eat and then race back up there to get set up for the afternoon. And yep. You get the questions coming in. And it's like, so like I said, I sat down in the lunchroom for about 15 minutes, got 2 pieces of cold pizza and then ran back upstairs and was like, I'm still hungry.
Yeah.
It was good. So yeah, the workshop was good. And then I had a pair of breakout sessions. I had one on Tuesday afternoon that was all about an introduction to the SharePoint framework. That one was fun because one of the things I found that was really interesting about this conference is really from the developer side. And I heard this from other sides as well, that you know, I focus on the developer side. I focus on the SharePoint framework. And I was really surprised by the number of people who were at this conference who were brand new to what I was talking about. So... in my workshop, I'd probably say 80% of the people that were in my workshop, of the 135, were brand new to the SharePoint framework.
Yeah.
In my breakout session that I did, I think the room held over 200 and it was pretty full. So I'm going to just say 200-ish people that were in there. And I prefaced it with, if you went to my workshop on Sunday, don't stay because you're not going to learn anything. We already did that. And then number two, if you know anything about the SharePoint framework, don't stay, go somewhere else because this is going to be really basic stuff. And I really, it's more for people who did not go to the workshop and don't know anything about the SharePoint framework to understand the what, the why, and how to get your machine set up and build one web part. So it was really basic and the room was packed. So the way I look at it is 80% of 135-ish people, so maybe 100-ish or so, and then 200 people at my other session. So that's 300 people. There was no overlap between them or minimal overlap. So ballpark 300 people. I think there was only 1,500 attendees at the conference. So if you figure half of those maybe are devs, maybe a little bit less than half are devs probably.
Yeah.
That's a significant portion of the developers that came to this conference had no experience with the way to customize modern sites that's been available now for almost 2 years. And they had no experience. Mm. That really surprised me on the number of people that this was new to. I mean, hey, don't get me wrong. It's great for Microsoft that you see that many new people coming into it. And it's great for me in the training business too, that many new people that are in it.
No, I believe that one of the key sort of numbers that Vesa talked about in the developer keynote was the growth of SPFX. Mm-hmm. I think he said something like 367 or 360 odd plus percent increase in SPFX usage. That sort of gels, right? That if people are using more SharePoint Online and companies are asking their dev teams to go and build things for their intranet or what have you, or apps that land in those experiences, then really your only option is SPFX. Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think what he showed in the developer keynote was they've had 10 major updates to the SharePoint framework since they went GA in February of 2017. And the SharePoint framework growth is up 373% in usage since last year.
Yeah, 373. That's what I thought. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really impressive. We're going to go through it in a minute. I took some notes during the keynote for some of the announcements. I don't think this is a negative, it is what it is. This may not be fair, and I welcome to be challenged by this, either by you or by one of our listeners. But I found that sitting in the keynote and looking at the news, I didn't find there to be many, like, wow. I didn't get any wow announcements, but I didn't really find to be, there really wasn't a whole lot of, to me, new stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
There was lots of little stuff. There's a handful of little things. I'll go through it in a bit. But I was kind of surprised. I just kind of felt like there's nothing I'm really walking away with like a wow.
Correct.
Like last year they had Spaces to talk about, SharePoint Spaces, which I know isn't out yet. But then they also talked about all the new list stuff that they were doing. And
yeah, I mean, this is the world of everything's a little more incremental, right? And not so big bang.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with the Build conference, right? I mean, it's just, it doesn't make sense to have like the, you know, shouldn't we have expected that? I don't know.
Yeah.
It sure sounded like they were alluding to some big things coming out at Ignite. So,
We will see. I mean, it's tough when we're going into conference season. There's Inspire is coming up in July, which is the Microsoft Partner Conference. And then we've got Ignite later this year in November. And so it's kind of hard for them in that, you know, you can't talk about everything now because otherwise you've got nothing left for those conferences, for those audiences. And this is not really a big audience, right? Like this show it's not a marquee Microsoft event, right?
Yeah.
It's not a tier one kind of, it's not a Build, Inspire or Ignite.
Yeah.
So they got to be careful about how much they let out of the bag right now versus how much they talk about Inspire and Ignite. So we may see some good stuff later on this year.
Should we talk about
some of the stuff that we did hear about?
I do have one thing I did want to share a little bit. Because we've been pretty bad. We bagged on this one technology quite a bit in the past, or at least I have quite a bit in the past. I'm now into my second or third-ish week
with OneDrive. I was going to ask, how's that going? I thought before we started recording, I was like, oh yeah, I must ask him how the transition is going.
I will say that I think that I screwed up a little bit and I moved our entire business over to OneDrive and Teams. And then I did it the same week that my wife had a ton of stuff going on that she was responsible for. And then I went out of town. I got some pretty irate texts threads from her when I was in Vegas about not being able to find the invoice template and stuff for customers. And
yeah, gotcha.
I did a lot of the who moved my cheese kind of thing to her. And we sat down last night and first chance we had a chance to really sit down since I've been home and I were having a glass of wine. I just kind of looked at her. I'm like, I need to say I'm sorry because I think I chose a bad time to do this. She's like, thank you for saying that. But I will say I'm very happy with it so far. I'm
great.
Surprisingly, I'm not using the part of Teams that is all collaboration stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm using the part of Teams that is more like my portal into lots of different things.
Oh, yeah.
I am really, really irritated by the whole organization switching thing.
God, don't mention it.
I used to spend most of my time in the Microsoft org for different teams I'm in, from related to Graph or SharePoint or PMP. And now I'm spending most of my time in my own and finding that I'm having to jump back and forth and almost having like my iPad is up on one side with one org tuned in and then my laptop is tuned into the other one. And I know you could do multiple browser windows and all that stuff, but it's just a pain in the ass. And I was just like, that's a pain. But all in all, I'm very pleased.
Yeah. Oh, that was great. Yeah. I was wondering how that was going. So I'm glad it's not a fury and frustration.
It's not. So far, it's so far, so good. So far,
excellent.
Anyway, anything you want to share with our listeners before we dive into SharePoint conference love?
No, let's get on with it.
All right, let's go. Hey, we all know that sometimes shift happens. That's why this spring, the inaugural Shift Happens conference will be coming to Washington, D.C. on June 12th and 13th. Hear from industry heavy hitters, change agents, and innovators as they share digital transformation wisdom. With keynotes from Microsoft's Jeff Teper and Tony Towns-Whitley, and analyst insights from Constellation and Forrester Research, this event is not to be missed. Over 2 days, find out how to get the most out of your Microsoft Office 365 and SharePoint investments, and hear about the success and failures firsthand from some of the largest and most regulated organizations. For more information, visit www.shifthappenscon.com and use the discount code CLOUDSHOW for 25% off registration for both single and group discounts. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. All right, CJ, I do have one thing about the conference that I thought I would share because kind of going off the theme that I just had a second ago, I kind of need to pull a mea culpa again.
Oh, yeah?
So on Monday of the conference, I had no responsibilities. There was the second day of workshops. My workshop was on day one. I was like, I got nothing to do. Sweet. So the first part of the day, I went to the Microsoft developer workshop where they talked about SharePoint framework for the first hour and a half, 2 hours. And listened to Luca Bandinelli and Vesa share some stuff with SharePoint framework. I was mostly curious to see the people who were in the audience, how much of an overlap there was, and the people who were in my workshop the day before, what kind of questions they got, and then how they talked about it. It was mostly just kind of a survey, like, you know, what are your competitors doing kind of a thing.
Yeah.
What I really want to do that day is I have been wanting for the longest time to sit in John White and Jason Himmelstein's Power BI workshop. Because I've always thought that Power BI, every time I go to pick it up, I get more and more pissed off at it. I was like, you know what? I think if I just sat there and I don't have any questions. I just want to sit there and watch someone use it for a while. Not a 4-minute demo, not an hour long session. I'm just going to sit here and I want to watch you go through your story and just kind of screw around with it. Every time they do their workshop, I always have a conflict where I'm doing my workshop and we're at the same conference, except for this week. And so I sat in there. They did most of their stuff in the morning apparently with slides and explanation and kind of level setting. And then the afternoon was like almost all demo. So I was in most of the afternoon session. And first of all, it's a fantastic workshop. If you want to learn Power BI, that's where you go. But watching the demos that both Jason and John did, it really opened my eyes to Power BI, so much so that I spent the entire day yesterday not doing what I was supposed to be doing, but instead pulling together like all this different data sources and changing how I was doing stuff. And I've been playing with Power BI a whole bunch now since I've been home, and I'm really happy with it. John did this demo. He did this demo where with Power BI, so remember that tool, I forget the name of it. I think it was called Metalogix, but Metalogix Migration Manager. But remember that product bought for CMS? It's a third-party product that you could use to migrate your existing content site over to Microsoft Content Management Server. And you did it by like using really like CSS selectors to pull content out of like templated pages to do that.
Yeah.
Power BI can do that natively. Like John went through and he pointed to the IMDb website for movies, did a search for a bunch of movies and then, or for whatever movie type or whatever, and then said, here's my data. And then Power BI kind of pulled it up and then it shows all the stuff that it found. And so as he's typing stuff into a column, it's like, you see him type in like two or three columns or two or three rows in a column. And then Power BI like kind of puts all the data after it and says, oh, here's where I think you're, here's where I found other stuff that looks like what you're looking for. And it figured out like, here's the movie names, here's the ratings, here's the actors, here's the producer. I was
wild.
He did that and then he split it out into making like where you could really quickly, we could see that just taking the IMDb database and in about 15 minutes or 10 minutes of his demo, we were able to see that comedies don't get much love at the Academy Awards, but here's this one actor that has gotten the most, or this one director who has had the most Academy nominations for this movie. I was blown away that he did that as fast as he did it.
That's incredible. Who knew?
It is really cool. So I'm turning into a bit of a Power BI lover. So our friends over at the Bifocal podcast, John and Jason, they did a really good job on helping me understand this stuff. I even was the butt of a lot of the jokes in their session. So they did this thing. They're like, into the session, hey, if you like the session, go fill out an eval. We're John and Jason. If you didn't like the session, fill out an eval. We're Andrew Hall.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, maybe we can, I don't know, do more with it. I'm not sure. Yeah. Now that you know how to use it.
Yeah. Hopefully we can.
Excellent.
So I thought what we would do is I've got a couple links to some of the news from that was announced this past week. And I'm going to call out three links here. One of them is kind of like the all up for the SharePoint conference. And at the bottom of that post, the post is called SharePoint Home Sites, Microsoft 365 Innovations in Intelligent Workplace. There are two more links, or there's about nine links or eight links at the bottom of that post of all their announcements. Two of them, one of them is about new updates and capabilities for developers at the SharePoint conference, and one of them was around OneDrive announcements from the SharePoint conference. And so I thought what we could do is instead of kind of walking through each one of those posts, I thought I would kind of run through my notes from the keynote and share some of the stuff that I heard. And if you want to know more, then that's probably where I would go, is go dive into all that stuff.
Yeah, there's loads of posts with lots of detail, right? So plenty to go read up on if you missed the recording must be available now as well. So people can go watch that. But yeah, if you'd rather read those, everything summarized in that first post that we'll link to.
Yeah. Why don't we give this a shot? Why don't you, feel free once you jump in and
interrupt
me whenever you feel fit. So this was the main keynote on Tuesday morning. It's the one that had Seth Patton, Jeff Tepper, guy from Takata, which is a company that recently bought Shire, which is a big pharma that have done a huge migration to Office 365, SharePoint Online. And then there were some other guys in there talking about OneDrive and talking about Yammer. And yeah, so anyway, Teams, Caruana was in there. So a couple of things they announced with. So get this, Microsoft Teams is the fastest growing product ever in the history of Microsoft. It is now in over 500,000 organizations in just 2 short years. And they have 180 million monthly active users of Office 365 commercial right now.
Mm.
Big numbers.
I heard the Teams number previously and the devil's in the detail, right? I don't want to be the naysayer here, but I'm going to be, even though I don't want to be. What does that mean? You know, like an org could have just started it, looked at it, and not be using it. Is that counted in that 500,000? I suspect it is.
Yeah, so like Andrew Connell Inc. would have been counted in that a month ago, even though we didn't use it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And one of the other details I saw was that out of that 500,000, there are 150 organizations with over 10,000 monthly active users.
Hmm.
Right, which when you think about it, is a extremely small fraction of the 500,000 orgs that are being used actively in quite large organizations. Right? Mm-hmm. Over 10,000 seats, I would say, could be considered a fairly large org. By no means are they really big, big, big orgs, right? Because big, big, big ones are over 100,000 seats, I would say. But 10,000 seats, decent-sized org, but there are only 150 of those. And I was quite surprised by that, honestly. I thought that number would be quite a lot bigger. I know I sound like I'm poo-pooing that number, but what I do think it tells us is that Teams is starting to gain a lot of traction. I don't think it's the de facto yet, but I definitely feel like we're at the bottom of the hockey stick effect with Teams, for sure. I think there's lots of good active usage going on, but I don't know if it's the be-all and end-all just yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It definitely does.
I'm excited about it because I definitely feel like it's on the right trajectory. I just don't think it's, you know, like ruling the world just yet.
Yeah. No, it does make sense. The rest of the keynote was broken up into a couple different like silos. Have you had a chance to watch the keynote yet?
No, I haven't watched the recording. No.
Okay. First, you can absolutely skip the Yammer section. It was one of the hardest parts of a keynote to sit through. I felt like
now there's Q&A. We can mark answers. It's like we should just all flip from GitHub to that.
it was so tough. When you watched it, you could tell the guy was like, they zoomed in a little too close to him because you could tell he was reading straight from his monitor that told him what to say. Like not his monitor on his computer in front of him, but the one that was in the
notes monitor. Yeah.
Yeah. So you could tell he was reading straight from it. And my God, I felt like he was trying to sell me a sofa the whole time or be on the radio. I don't know who it was. So if you're a listener of our show, I apologize, but that was hard to get sit through. Okay. So the first section was teamwork and business process. Hey, no one's ever accused this of not being honest.
No, that's true.
First section of the keynote was about teamwork and business process. So yeah, so you're right. So since May of 2016, since they did the Future of SharePoint event, SharePoint growth has gone up by a factor of four, or SharePoint's grown by a factor of four. So
in 365.
In SharePoint Online, correct. Yeah, yep. In Office 365. Yep. Now, they have a bunch of things here that were related to OneDrive. And I, as somebody who just migrated to it, I thought that some of this stuff was kind of interesting here. Although I'm curious to see if it really translates to people who are also not on Windows and like on Mac and use Office. So first of all, one of the new features they added is something called request files. So what I can do is if I go to a document library, let's say for example, great scenario for this is like conference slides. So you got to submit your slides. Like when you speak at SP Fest, they create a folder and they say, go, and they make it a public folder and they just say, go here and upload your slides and please name them like blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
So they're like, you know, put your name in there and do this. So one of the things that you can do is I can go into OneDrive, create a new folder, and then I can click on this request files thing and it asks me for a bunch of email addresses. And so I can put in the email address of people I want to send files to me and it will send the email out. You click a link, takes you back to the OneDrive website, and it basically says, it just prompts you to say, go ahead and start select the files that you want to upload. So it was able to take my message and everything, and then it took those files, put them in my OneDrive folder that I designated, and it prepended it with the name of the person who just uploaded the file.
That's cool. Do they need permissions to do that?
By sending them an email, that was their permission to do it. It's like a one-time valid link.
That's cool. So they don't have to be in your organization. Mm-mm. You can, so say you're having a conversation with somebody and you're like, oh yeah, I should really send you that PowerPoint or something, right? Mm-hmm. Or zip file. And it's big, so you can't email them. At least this way, I could send you a link and say, hey, you really need to send me this PowerPoint. Click this link and upload it. That's kind of cool. But yeah, I think that's a really useful feature.
I did too. I thought that was a really cool feature. I didn't see that one coming. It's cool when you see features that you didn't think of the scenario for and it's like, oh yeah, I would use that. Here's another one. So if you're in Office, if you go to share, let's say you're in Office in Microsoft Word, and I want you to get involved on the notes for our podcast that we're working on right now.
Yeah.
So what I would do is I'd add a comment and I would do like at Chris Johnson, hey, would you add in your notes for your pick for later on in the episode that we're going to do? It would detect, not only detects you, but it would also detect, hey, Chris Johnson doesn't have access. Do you want me to give him access to this? So you don't have to go figure all that sharing stuff out that's been a pain in the past.
Yeah.
Another one, there's a lot more stuff about sharing files across teams. Does a similar thing to that. So if I want to share files across teams, it's a better experience or an easier experience. And if I go to a document library in SharePoint, or which is also available in OneDrive, if there's a popular file, so like we have a document library that's got a bunch of tax stuff in it, a bunch of logistics and everything.
Yeah.
Or contractual stuff. You can pin files to the top of the document library. So I immediately went in, saw that was in my tenant, and I pinned my W-9 for 2019, my IRS form, because when some companies buy my training, they say, we need your W-9 before we can pay for it. And having that at the very top, there's no like trying to find in the document library. It's right there at the top.
Yeah, gotcha. That's nice.
This was pretty cool. So they now have a concept called differential sync. So the best is explain the demo that he did. He opened up a like 1.5 gig image in Microsoft Paint, added some text to it, and then saved his changes, and then explained what happened that OneDrive locally looked at the file, did a bit comparison of the file, figured out what parts of the file actually changed, and only sent the change part up to OneDrive and not the 1.5 gig file, which would be uploading a 1.5 gig file in the middle of a keynote. It was done syncing it within about 5 seconds.
Yeah. This already existed for Office files.
For Office files it did, but this is a binary image.
This is for other stuff. Yeah, gotcha. So they basically bought differential sync for any type of file.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Another thing they did was around Microsoft Teams. They have a full screen view with a list of a SharePoint list within a team. So if you are looking at a SharePoint list, you can get the full kind of experience, not like a little windowed experience.
Yeah.
And they also added in a new list. So you can create a new list. Remember how before we could do like the import list from Excel? You create a new SharePoint list from Excel. What they did is they set it up to where you could do like have Excel, and they were, you would say, go create a new list. Here's Excel. Mm-hmm. And then you'd also tell it like what the data types are and having your refiners. And you could even say, I don't want these columns to be imported into the list and kind of filter those things out.
Yeah, gotcha. There's a lot of nice little improvements. That's great.
A lot more stuff coming for policy and IRM protection, visibility into who you... Oh, this was cool. In SharePoint, you can now go on a... I wasn't clear if this was site or tenant level, but they showed it at the site level. I just couldn't tell if it was also tenant, but you can have visibility across your entire site, what you've shared, and who has access to stuff.
Yeah.
And you can also set your sharing to have an expiration. So I could share something with you, but that would expire and go away after 30 days.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm glad they're making these incremental sharing improvements, right? Because it obviously rounds out their offering, and I'm glad to hear it's working a bit better than it used to be in the past.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
There's a little more stuff here that I'll go through kind of quick. That was the big stuff to me. If you're interested in this stuff, which I was, and I think you would be too, there was the second section was around SharePoint architecture innovation. And this was not stuff that you can do they could really talk about in a marketing sense, but it was stuff that is going on behind the scenes that they've done to improve SharePoint that's facilitating a lot of other stuff. So first of all, SharePoint is the biggest consumer of Azure storage across all of Azure. They're the biggest consumer of Azure storage.
Right.
So what they did is they had a whole re-architecture of how they store data in SharePoint. So they have this, what they call the next gen storage, which is being leveraged by, if you saw stuff that we talked a little bit about it in the build recap, but leveraged by the Fluid framework, allowing collaborative authoring between teams and authors, that stuff that is without any kind of a laggy kind of experience, really good experience there.
Nice. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that they're the biggest consumer with OneDrive, basically.
Mm-hmm. They had other stuff too. They had another section around employee engagement, talked a lot about home sites. I can't speak too much to home sites. You might be able to, because I know you guys did some stuff with them.
Yeah, we got HomeSites a few weeks back and built a demo around it and our integration with it. And we're kind of one of the launch partners for HomeSites that are coming soon. HomeSites are like a gateway to SharePoint, right? So in the past, you had lots of different sites, but it wasn't clear, you know, which one was the most important, right? And so HomeSites are kind of, my take on HomeSites are that they are sort of a designated gateway or landing page for your organization, right? And so they do things like the authoritative corporate news, for example. They're doing an integration with the mobile app so that there'll be a home view in the SharePoint mobile app and it'll drive from your designated home site, for example. The search integration with the new Microsoft Search stuff. So there's like consistent search experience in the top suite bar of Office 365. And then there's some new layout pieces as well. So sort of more incremental improvements to what's going on with modern pages in SharePoint, which were really nice too. So yeah, that's what HomeSites are really driving towards, is trying to be that central place for where you start or a landing page in SharePoint.
Sounds a little bit like, yo, dog, I got an intranet for your intranet.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think the theory is that this is the, you'll designate your intranet as the home site in Office 365, right? And that this would be the place, you designate your intranet as like the home site, which would then help drive experiences elsewhere, like in the mobile app, putting them there when they go to their home view, for example.
Mm.
Stuff like that. It doesn't have to be the root site of your Office 365 experience if you don't want it to be, I believe. But yeah, there's some other stuff. They've got mega menu things coming. They've got the search integration, mobile integration, corporate news, organizational news source stuff. It's really just a designation, right? As opposed to, so that other things can drive off that thing being the, so the official authoritative source of some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, anyway, cool. We did a demo around it. It's, yeah, like I said, more incremental modern page improvements, which was nice. And definitely will help. I think it's probably targeted more at small and medium businesses. In my personal opinion, this is not what Microsoft would say, but my personal opinion is that it's more small and medium business targeted. I think large enterprises are doing really full-on intranet still, and that it may not suit them. Although, you know, having said that, part of the news that we, that Microsoft included in the HomeSites post was from us around the product we have called Wisdom that we acquired from an amazing team in Denmark, who one of their customers is Novartis, who's a huge customer. And they haven't decided on HomeSites yet, but they're certainly looking at it and considering it as being part of their new intranet that, that the Wisdom team are building with them in SharePoint Online. So who knows? It may be, may well be very suitable to larger enterprises. But, you know, those are the typical customers that want really custom stuff, you know.
Mm.
Really, everybody's got their certain unique requirements. So, yeah. Mm. So, yeah, that's HomeSites.
Cool. The next section was more around what was specific to search and content intelligence is what they said. Mm. And I think all of this is, I picked up that all of this was all coming soon stuff. They're taking the Search Admin Center. It's going to be part of the SharePoint Admin Center. So it's going to be, it's not going to be a separate thing like it's been in the past. They're going to integrate it in. We're going to see like Search Admin, Refiners, Display Templates, all that stuff will be in the SharePoint Admin Center. And then this is just going to be my grab bag of search stuff that's coming. The ability to unlock text that is inside images that are stored as PDFs. So today they've been able to do that with just images. They've been able to do OCR on PDFs. Now they're going to be able to do also the images, OCR, the images that are embedded inside of a PDF. Being able to develop apps with an endpoint from Microsoft Search in the graph. So search will be available in the graph. You'll be able to, I found this, I almost busted out laughing when I heard this. You'll be able to find conversations very soon in Yammer with Microsoft Search. So that was my experience. I'm like, oh my God, you can find conversations. That's, I thought that was a feature of Yammer. You're not supposed to ever find something in there.
I bet you $100 I still can't find them. I absolutely, categorically guarantee it.
Yeah.
It's impossible. It's a feature ability, at this point. That you can't find shit. It's
that was a fridge. No, that's the whole reason you have a conversation in Yammer, so it can't be tracked. Sorry.
Savage.
We need to take this out of Teams and go over to Yammer. So we'll be able to, anyway. Searching for videos within Stream, OneDrive, and in SharePoint. So content will be indexed, like transcribed inside videos in Stream, OneDrive, and SharePoint, be able to find that content. That's all the notes that I took from the keynote.
Gotcha. What about like on-prem stuff? Anything?
There is some stuff because that
SharePoint 2019 improvements. Yeah.
Where is it? It was
managed instances.
Yes.
Azure SQL database and Azure Stack support, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Extending support for deploying SharePoint Server 2016 and 2019 on Azure Stack. So you can build and run SharePoint environments using consistent Azure services on premises to meet regulatory or technical requirements.
So there was no new server announcement.
Nope.
No feature pack kind of announcements or anything like that around on-prem.
Nope.
Interesting. I didn't hear many people talking about that for the first time.
Not from Microsoft, but I did have quite a few. Like a couple weeks ago, I was at SP Fest in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
A lot of on-prem. Hmm. But I was also very surprised at how many government and military organizations had gone to the government cloud, the GCC.
Gotcha. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I heard there were a lot of on-prem people that were at the conference, but I didn't hear Microsoft I didn't hear a single mention of on-prem in the keynote or anywhere else. So
yeah, I see.
I'd say it wasn't there, but.
Some dev stuff that was talked about, not so much keynote, but I guess in the developer keynote and things that Vesa ran, that I did a small demo in, was application pages and Microsoft Teams tabs. So they've done some nice work in 1.8, SPFX 1.8, to let you put your SPFX components into Teams, which is actually really cool. Very, very easy to do. If you're building an SPFX web part now, it's literally a manifest change. And then you may have to do some styling tweaks just to make it look right in Teams. But in general, it's a very easy experience to get your SPFX stuff in Teams, which is nice because, you know, if you're building an application for your company, it might be some sort of line of business app, and you're using SPFX to do it, with a really small change, you can get it into Teams now, which is pretty sweet. And then likewise, you're going to be able to have, what is it, Teams tabs in SharePoint or something along, yes. I can't remember exactly the words they use, where you can create those sort of not quite full page, but mostly full page tab experiences in SharePoint and pulling in those applications into SharePoint.
It's that, and it's also being able to not just pull in Microsoft Teams tab into SharePoint, but also being able to they're calling it full page app pages, which is very descriptive of what's going on, but it's effectively people have been asking, hey, I want to do a single page app inside SharePoint with SharePoint framework. That's what this is. So this is a really cool feature because it really shows that by just creating a web part, you have the ability to either run it in a little windowed experience like we do today with web parts, or to run it in as a Microsoft Teams tab, or you can run it as a full page app inside of SharePoint, and you still get the header at the very top of the page with the sweet bar and you
with the nav and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But you still, for you old school SharePoint people, what you know is placeholder main, that's where your web part goes. And you don't, that nobody can add, there's no web part controls. You don't have the ability to add in like other web parts or add in different layouts and stuff like that. It's just one giant canvas, one web part goes on it. And when you put the page into edit mode, you get the edit experience for that web part, but you can't do anything. So it's really cool.
It's kind of like one big web part zone.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, a big canvas.
Yeah, nice. It talks about provisioning experiences, and I guess this is the ability to stamp out new sites using particular templates and things. I don't know too much about it. Do you know more about that, the online provisioning service?
Yeah, so this is currently in beta, or currently in preview, and what it is called the SharePoint Online Provisioning Service. And what it is that there's an engine that the Patterns and Practices team has built to create new sites, and you can now define a template. There's like 10 existing templates, but you can go create your own. And you go to this site, you log in as a tenant admin in your organization, and then you grant the site access to your SharePoint Online environment, and in a matter of minutes, it will create a brand new SharePoint site based on the template that you selected. So you don't have to go through and configure everything on your own. So it's pretty slick. It's still in beta, and there's a few like little rough edges around it, but it's gotten a lot of attention since it was released.
That's cool. That's cool. I wonder if they'll bake this into the product eventually.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it's a web app, right? That it's a web application that you sign into, you pick a template, and then it uses all the APIs in 365 to go punch out a site.
Yep.
Okay. Very nice. That will help. Certainly some people looking for, you know, replicable, I guess. Sites you can replicate.
Yeah. That's everything. That's all the news that I was reviewing or that I picked up on.
Yeah.
From the SharePoint conference. I'm sure there's more. I'm sure I'm missing some stuff, but that's the big stuff that I wanted to cover.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think those are all the big things I noticed too. And lots of nice little steps forward as opposed to big bombshells.
Yeah. It was stuff that you can use today, but nothing epic that you've got to go learn. I mean, I think that's the nice part about it is that most of the improvements that I saw were around OneDrive, SharePoint document libraries. There's a lot of search stuff that's coming. And that's really it. I mean, to me, there were no announcements from the developer side. All the stuff that we knew on the developer side is all because they're doing so much in the open now. So there was nothing, there was nothing news from the developer side.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but
Rad.
Cool. Well, I guess we just got one thing left to do today.
Exactly. Let's do it.
For those of us familiar with ShareGate, we know that they've always been about SharePoint and Office 365 migration. But now that we've all moved to the cloud, like me, you're probably thinking, how about how to scale your Office 365 to a full self-serve environment without worrying about thousands of groups and teams popping up out of nowhere, aka sprawl. That's why the folks at ShareGate developed ShareGate Apricot. It's a solution that helps us automate our Office 365 groups governance by allowing us to collaborate with users to keep everyone accountable for the things they create. Their super simple to use in-app experience lets us lighten our load by delegating group management responsibilities to users we trust, aka no more sprawl. Want to get your hands on ShareGate Apricot? Try it for free for 30 days at ShareGate.com/collegeshow.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. All right, CJ, would you like to go first with our fabulous picks?
Yeah, I was a little pick poor this week, but I did make a note of a hilarious tweet from Steven Sinofsky, who used to be a big wig at Microsoft, who ran the Windows division for a while, ran the Office division for a while, and he's actually quite an interesting Twitterer. Anyway, he said, "Here's my Uber story." As in Uber, the car sharing service or car ride service. It says, "I was at a wedding in 2010, and as it ended late, no one could get a cab. One person had this new app that summoned a town car. It was amazing. The car arrived, everyone squeezed in, and there wasn't room for us. I had a Windows phone. The end." That was... very interesting for a variety of reasons. One, because he was at Microsoft at the time and was probably sitting there going, oh dear, that's how much trouble we're in the phone market, right? Like, that's what an app ecosystem means, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I loved Windows Phone. I thought it was great, but I liked the OS. I didn't like the app ecosystem. But I just thought it was a really funny tweet coming from somebody with that history and somebody in a place of influence at Microsoft at the time. Maybe not over Windows Phone, but certainly at Microsoft, yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you got going on?
So I've got one that I found. I've been sitting on this for a couple of weeks, and I've listened to the majority, or I've read the majority of this article. I just haven't gotten all the way through it, but it's a good read. It's from The New Yorker, and it's called The Race to Develop the Moon. For science, profit, and pride, China, the United States, and private companies are hunting for resources on the lunar surface. And it just kind of, it talks about... like how recently how the China National Space Administration landed a spacecraft on the far side of the moon, the, you know, the side we can't see. And it was just there to kind of just, hey, let's take a look and see what we can do.
Yeah.
It didn't have a whole lot of uses or specific things, but or specific purpose other than, hey, look what we could do. It's interesting though, because now there's, you know, you've got like exactly the subtitle said, the article goes through about how, you know, the United States wants to set up at least some sort of presence on the moon to kind of see what resources are there that we could actually, that we could take advantage of. And China's doing the same thing. And you've got SpaceX talking about the same thing. It's just like, this is, it's interesting. It's interesting. It's a good read. Good space read.
I mean, it's good for us space nerds who are geeking out about all these countries now looking at the moon and what's possible and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. And we do have a listener pick this week.
We do.
Along similar lines.
We do. Got to keep it spacey.
Exactly. This is a guest pick and their pick is 13 Minutes to the Moon, a BBC documentary. Well, not documentary. Podcast, I think you could say. About in line with the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. And it's entitled, How the First Moon Landing Was Saved, the full story of the people who made Apollo 11 happen and prevented it from going badly wrong, which I thought was pretty interesting. So that was from listener Ellen Reed. So thank you, Ellen, for sending in your listener pick. And we will be in touch to get your address and send out a lovely solo key for your efforts.
Absolutely, yeah. So far as they've got, it looks like they have T-minus 4, 3, 2, 1, and then episodes 1 and 2. And the T-minus 1 through 4, or 4 through 1, those, all of those are anywhere from 41 seconds to 4 minutes long. So those are really short. So you can definitely get a good piece of it pretty quick.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm going to listen to those for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, one more thing before we go, just before we wrap up. It's the Monaco Grand Prix this weekend.
And it's the Indy 500.
And it's the Indy 500. But also more importantly, Formula One lost an absolute legend this week. Niki Lauda died. Amazing story of this man. If you haven't watched Rush, it's a great movie to go check out. Tells a lot of the story of the rivalry between James Hunt and Niki Lauda and those guys in the early Formula One years, and how the sport was just you really were risking your life every single day. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But he survived an incredible, incredible crash fire. And it's kind of an inspiration, really. And yeah, anyway, he passed away this week after some complications, I think, around lung transplants he'd recently had. And huge loss to the sport. But I think there's going to be a really, really nice tribute at Monaco this weekend to say goodbye to him.
Yeah, there's a few. I've seen a couple of the helmets from some of the drivers. Like Jules has got I think half of his helmet is a tribute, and the other half is, but half of his helmet is like a tribute to Niki Lauda. Mm. But it's a big loss right on the eve of probably the biggest race weekend.
Yes.
Well, definitely for open wheel, but I think the biggest race weekend, like you wake up in the morning on the East Coast and you watch Monaco.
Yeah.
And then go get a shower and get your breakfast and you come back and you watch the Indy 500.
Yeah. It's big on both sides of the pond.
Yeah.
Shame Alonso didn't make the cut this year. I would have liked to have seen him race, but hey, maybe they'll do it again next year.
They say they are. They fired the guy that was leading up their Indy program. So looks like...
Oh, really?
Well, I shouldn't say they fired him. His contract was due to expire on Sunday night after the Indy 500. So
gotcha.
I'm sure if they did a decent job, he would have been renewed. But they basically just told him that, yep, so there's nothing else for you to do this weekend. Don't come back to work.
Yeah. Well, and they missed qualifying by fractions of a second. And not even big fractions of a second, like thousandths of a second from what I understand.
7 thousandths of a second, I think.
Wow.
Something like that. But to be fair, so you're right. They did just barely miss it. But the entire like week leading up to it, they were missing speed. They were like way off the pace.
Yeah, they were way off the pace. Yeah. Well, they also stacked their primary car like 3 days before qualifying or 2 days before qualifying or something. Mm-hmm. So that didn't help.
So for you non-Kiwi listeners, that means that he crashed it.
Yeah. He had a rapid unexpected disassembly, a rut.
It doesn't help by hitting, when he hit three walls, hit the outside or the inside wall, then the outside wall, and then back to the outside, then
outside. Yeah.
And one of them is when he backed into the gearbox, just decided to go. He decided to insert the gearbox into the engine where they're not supposed to go that way.
Always awkward.
All right.
Excellent. All right. Good CJ, to in the saddle this week, KC.
Definitely. Feels like I've seen you more on this when we did the video than I saw you at all last week in Vegas. We were in the same city.
Yeah. And we didn't even get that much time to hang out. We were all running around doing different things and I had loads of stuff going on and you did too. And yeah, so we did get to hang out a little bit, but not too much.
No, unfortunately not. But it's all good.
One of our listeners noticed and tweeted a photo of you and me hanging out at the front of the developer keynote just before it started. And noticed that when I turned around and saw you that I did this very dramatic, I don't know, what was it? Welcome or hello or something like that? Something like that. It was good to see you.
That was, I think that picture pretty much shows the only time that we got to hang out at the conference.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was so stoked about it. Anyway, cool. All right. Have a good weekend of racing and we'll catch you next week.
Yeah, man. Have a good one.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.